Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we have the 4th of July selection of Tammy, which doesn't exactly scream 4th of July to me, Earth to Echo, which also doesn't scream 4th of July, Deliver Us from Evil, and Heatstroke on the docket to talk about today. We also have some news. We have a little bit more talking about the DVD giveaway. One more week to enter with that. Some listener feedback, box office predictions, and the world-famous DVD roundup. So strap in. We are ready to roll into the show. If you want to get a hold of me, you can reach me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And on Twitter, you can find me at twitter.com/KevinCarr. Let's roll on into the news.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. First of all, the news, and this is news for me, if you'll recall, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, I am going to be traveling next week to Israel for the Jerusalem Film Festival. Now, it's the Jerusalem Film Festival in Israel. It's not like Jerusalem, Kansas. It's the actual, honest to God, Jerusalem in Israel, and I will be attending the film festival. I'm very excited about this, and we'll be coming back next week talking about the events and what's going on there. And the following week, I'll give a nice little recap. It's a nice taste of the international world for everybody. First off, I want to talk about some of the things that are happening there. The opening film is the world premiere of Dancing Arabs by Aaron Ricklis, I believe is how you say the director's name. It's based on the book by Saeed Kassoua, and it's about an Arab man who is enrolled in an elite Jewish boarding school, and it's told humorously and tragically how he's caught between both worlds. That's one I'm really looking forward to, simply because it's highlighted and headlined in the program. Some of the special guests that are going to be there, Spike Jonze. He's going to be doing a master's class, and he's going to be showing his film Being John Malkovich, which is, he's only done a couple films, but it's a fantastic movie. Chan-wook Park, who directed Old Boy and Stoker, he's going to be showing those as well, and he'll be teaching some master classes. And then also David Mamet will be reading from his new book, The Handle and the Hold, which is pretty significant. These are some pretty cool people that hopefully I'll have a chance to interact with and see some of their work and just see. This is really the first big film festival I've ever been to, so I'm looking forward to it. There's also going to be the Israeli Feature Film Competition and the closing film, which I do not think I'm going to be there for because I think my plane has to take me back to the States, is The Wind Rises by Hayao Miyazaki, which is a fantastic movie. I've actually already seen it, so it's definitely worth checking out if you haven't. Now, the rest of the news I want to talk about, this is all TV stuff. Just this week, just a bunch of TV stuff happened that I kind of want to point out. First one, Community actually is getting its 6th season on Yahoo. Now, NBC famously canceled it just this last year, and of course, it's had some ups and downs with firing Dan Harmon and bringing him back and getting rid of Chevy Chase. I've never been a big fan of the demanding hashtag 6 seasons in a movie, mainly because I find that there's a certain level of entitlement that's just, well, let's just face it, it's just ridiculous. The problem with this is it's limping to 6 seasons. It's not good, solid 6 seasons going out on top. It is dragging its bloodied body across the line for 6 seasons. And will it get a movie? Maybe. But just the entitled demand of the fans, I've always found a little mind-boggling there. Another piece of news is Doctor Who returns in August. Now, this, of course, is going to be the new Doctor Who with Peter Capaldi playing the famous Time Lord in the 13th or 14th or 15th iteration of Doctor Who, depending on how you're counting. They've gone way beyond how many they're supposed to, and now we've got the new Doctor Who returning, I believe, August 23rd. And they've recently released who, at least for the opening one, who the bad guys are going to be in. It's the Return of the Cybermen, which is a classic Doctor Who villain going all the way back at least to the second Doctor, maybe even the first Doctor. I believe William Hartnell, he dealt with the Cybermen. So that's very exciting to see that. There's also going to be a character called the Gatekeeper of the Nether Sphere, so whatever that is. And, of course, the return of the lovely Clara, who's one of my favorite companions recently. She's just adorable. Another piece of BBC news, actually, is Sherlock is likely going to return with a Christmas special, not this year, but next year. One of the things is Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch. Both of them are extremely popular right now. Martin Freeman because of The Hobbit, and Fargo, and Benedict Cumberbatch also for The Hobbit, and pretty much everything else. He played Khan. Oh, not Khan in Star Trek Into Darkness. But they are going to try and align their schedules and do a Christmas special for 2015, which will be nice. And then finally, this is an interesting piece of news. This isn't anything I really care about, but the TV show based on Constantine. The TV show Constantine, which is based on a comic series. They did a movie a couple years ago with Keanu Reeves playing the title character. And one of the big things is the character smokes. And apparently, broadcast standards and practices for NBC is not going to allow Constantine to smoke, which is kind of ridiculous in the sense because that is his character's, that's what his character does. And it's actually integral to his part. So I think this is sort of taking that anti-smoking Nazism to a ridiculous level. I really don't care when it comes to the show. I just think it's ridiculous that you're now not even allowed to show somebody smoke, which is just sort of like denying reality. Cause even though smoking's kind of out of favor now, but there's still plenty of people to smoke, and to deny the fact that people smoke. I mean, especially if it's integral to the character. I mean, if you've got a character, you've got this old, batty old man who's going to be, you know, smoking, chain smoking, and they're going to be talking like this all the time, then yeah, they should be smoking, because maybe that shows the bad things that happen with smoking. It's not idealizing it, and it's not making it look like it's cool or anything. So that's just dumb. That is just a level of political correctness we don't need in movies. There's way more problems. There are greater problems in the world to worry about than whether some crappy comic book character on television is smoking or not. People, what am I going to do with you? Well, you're hearing that sound. That means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Woo-hoo. Today, we're going to be looking at two movies. One of them opens later this summer, and that is Life After Beth. It stars Aubrey Plaza, famous for Parks and Recreation, and her very surly character of April Ludgate. And she plays a girl who is in love with a boy, and she dies, and she comes back as a zombie.
Okay.
Where is she?
Listen.
She is not dead.
I went to her grave. There's a hole in the ground.
It's a miracle.
Beth, you're so beautiful. I'm so happy you're back.
Zach, what's happening to me?
You ate a guy.
Oh, what do you want from me, Zach? I'm a zombie. Zombies eat guys.
This one looks funny. I'll tell you, this one has a certain ring to it, a certain a timber to it, a bent to it that I think could be a lot of fun. So I kind of look forward to this. I'm not a huge zombie fan, but I do like the batch of zomcoms we've gotten over the last 10 or 15 years. Stuff like Shaun of the Dead and Fido and even Warm Bodies. I think just your typical zombie movie can be a little bit dry and boring, but throw in a little bit of fun with something like this, and I think you got a potentially good movie. So I am looking forward to that. That opens on August 15th. There's also one that opens on December 25th. Christmas Day is Paddington, based on the book series.
Hello, I just need to add something to my home insurance policy. Well, what it is we have a guest for the night, a bear, and I just needed some extra cover for any yes, a bear. Grizzly? Not particularly. Mind you, I haven't seen him in the mornings.
When the trailer dropped for this movie, a lot of people kind of expressed concern because they thought Paddington was creepy looking. And I always thought of Paddington. I guess I read the books when I was a little kid, but I haven't picked one up in years, decades, scores of years, dozens of years. I haven't looked at this. I always thought he was a stuffed bear because anybody who had a Paddington bear was a stuffed bear, obviously. But I guess he's a real bear. At least in this movie, he is. I don't know. Looks cute. I'm not as freaked out by Paddington. I don't think he's really living in the uncanny valley. I think he looks like a pretty good emulated 3D bear. So there you go. Anyways, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be reviewing Tammy and Heatstroke. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies coming back at you. We're going to be talking about a couple new movies out this week. One that's probably going to be pretty big, and the other one that's going to be flying under most people's radar. So it's kind of nice to just kind of give it a little bit of heads up for that one. The first one I want to talk about is Tammy. Melissa McCarthy plays a woman who loses her job and discovers her husband is having an affair, which prompts her to leave on a road trip with her alcoholic grandmother.
Freeze! Nobody move!
He knocked over a topper, Jack.
Do you want some pies? You want pies?
Yes, please.
I don't know where I'm going.
I've always wanted to go to Niagara Falls. How about a beer?
No.
Whiskey?
No.
Oh, my God. You're pregnant.
I'm driving a car.
You're a fugitive from justice.
America, huh? What have you ever done that's that cool?
I watched Neil Armstrong walk on the moon.
On his bike?
Neil.
I think Melissa McCarthy is a brilliant comedian. I think she's a very good actor. I think she's got a lot of depth. I think she's got a lot of emotion. And it has, for the last couple years, has kind of pained me to see her just sort of rolling in her own shtick that isn't forcing her to really grow as an actor and do something different. Because if you look at the character she played in Bridesmaids, it's the same character that she plays in Identity Thief. It's the same character she played in The Heat. And it's the same character she plays in Tammy. Melissa McCarthy has a lot of talent in her. And just playing sort of the acerbic, fat, ugly, disheveled, redneck kind of person who doesn't know how to take care of herself and runs around in Crocs. I don't like that. It's funny for like a supporting character in Bridesmaids, but overall, I've never been a big fan of this character. And it's there in spades in Tammy. And now, if you like Melissa McCarthy and you think her shtick is funny, you're going to love it. It's a less refined version of the character from Identity Thief. And it's very similar to the character from The Heat, which, again, it's just, I hated The Heat. And I did not like where the characters were in this movie. Also, I'm fine with a movie where the characters are terrible people. Sometimes that can be a great source of comedy. The TV show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is a great example. Same thing with The League. Both of them are kind of cut from the same cloth. These are horrible people. Terrible people that are pathetic, Loserville type people. And it's hilarious to watch bad things happen to them. I don't think they stick the landing this way with Tammy. Same thing, you can be very dramatic and very entertaining. I remember the movie Boogie Nights. I love Boogie Nights because the characters, they're all really shallow. At times, some of them very despicable human beings, but there's a certain warmth and a familial quality to their dysfunction. And I can enjoy that. This movie, all the characters were awful people who I didn't like. I mean, when you're in a movie and you're like, you know what, if all the characters just spontaneously caught on fire, I'd be okay with it. That to me doesn't make a good movie. That doesn't make it entertaining. And that's the way the character Tammy is. But it's the shtick. It's darker actually than most of the other films that she's done. Like Identity Thief has, you know, gets serious at times, but I mean, this one goes to some pretty dark places and some very uncomfortable places. And I don't know. I'm not wild about it. Susan Sarandon plays her grandmother in there. And actually, I'm not a huge Susan Sarandon fan. I never have been. But I thought she did a fine job. I think she actually does a really good job. And she does bring a level of humanity to the role. The only problem is again, like Tammy, the character of Tammy, she's just a horrible person. Beginning to end, top to bottom. And I'm like, well, they're so bad. I don't even have sympathy for them. So I can't even connect with them on that level. So if you like that sort of thing, I guess Tammy is fine. But I just, like I said, I wish Melissa McCarthy would do something better. I remember when she was on the TV show Samantha Who, and she was just simply adorable on that show. And I haven't watched Mike and Molly, so I can't tell you, you know, whether she's good in that role or whether she's effective there. But I'm assuming that it's at least a certain version or iteration of this obnoxious sort of white trashy kind of character. Maybe I'm totally wrong. I may have to watch the show, but yeah, unfortunately it's more the same. And I mean, it does well. The Heat was a huge hit. The Identity Thief was a huge hit. Bridesmaids was a huge hit for her. Didn't she win an Oscar for that one? But this one, but I think she's going into an Adam Sandler rut at this point. And I, you know, four films that were basically playing the same kind of character. you're better than that, Melissa McCarthy. So ultimately, I have to say that Tammy sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Heatstroke. It's a much smaller movie. It's released by Phase 4, which is, they snatch up a lot of the mid-level properties that have, they can tend to have some really pretty big names in them. Like this one, I mean, I wouldn't exactly call Stephen Dorff a huge name. I mean, he's been in a lot of these smaller films, but he's not unrecognizable. And Peter Stormare, well, plays Peter Stormare in this movie. He always plays Peter Stormare. Even when he was in Fargo, he played Peter Stormare. He was just a very blonde version of Peter Stormare. This film is about a guy who does research on hyenas, and he has to travel to Africa. And he's traveling with his girlfriend slash research partner. And his ex-wife contacts him and wants him to take along his daughter, who has gotten busted for drugs. And so they have to go there. And, of course, bad things happen because they're in Africa, for crying out loud, and they were unprepared for some pretty nasty stuff.
I want you to take her with you.
Where?
On your field trip, of course.
Oh, this is a work trip.
Would you mind not doing that?
Whatever.
Can we just talk? Aren't we talking now?
You're acting like a spoiled brat. You're here because you were picked up by the police.
Maybe you could try a little harder. She's my daughter.
Okay. They've come back to get me. They won't get you.
Where did you come from?
We need help.
You know, this movie works on certain levels because it is a very much of a what-if movie, and it goes from being sort of this slightly annoying family movie to a very somewhat intense thriller with potential severe crime happening. There are certain things I like about it. I like certain reactions of the characters, how some of the characters do take control of the situations and handle it. I think that's really cool. The girl in it, who apparently she's on Game of Thrones, who plays the daughter, she just annoys me. And maybe it's because I don't have girls. I have three boys, and they're just getting into the teenage years. So it's a lot of fun in my house. But I've never been a big fan of just the surly teenage girl who just is like, God, Dad, what are you doing, Dad? Apparently in my brain, that's how all teenage girls talk, I guess. But her character just is almost too naive at times. And her father is also too naive. For somebody who works in Africa, and I mean, I'm sure there's some wonderful places in Africa. I'm sure there's wonderful places. I'm sure the wilderness is great. But let me tell you, if I ended up traveling to Africa, I would be watching my back all the time. Because whenever you hear horrible things happening, whether it's warlords or genocide or just disease, it's in Africa. I mean, I'm sure, like I said, the people who live there and there's a lot of pride you can have in where you live, but Africa can be a dangerous place depending on where you go. And so there's a certain level of naivete that the people have in this that they shouldn't have, in my opinion. And they do kind of lay on the villains a bit thick, but it feels like, you know what it feels like? It feels like one of those Ozploitation movies. I mean, it doesn't take place in Australia, but it feels like that. It feels like something that would have been shot during that time and have a story that kind of goes really bad. But it doesn't go, the other thing is it doesn't go as bad as it could, which on one hand I appreciated, but I also felt it was a bit of a punch puller at times. So ultimately, I'm going to say that Heatstroke kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. All right, I have to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Earth to Echo, 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 and deliver us from evil, evil, evil. Kevin Carr here with Fat Guys of the Movies, finishing up the movie reviews in this segment. We're going to be talking about Earth to Echo and Deliver Us from Evil, two of the big movies coming out. We already talked about Tammy. Let's see if these movies have enough to rival that. So let's kick this thing off with Earth to Echo. A group of 13-year-old kids discover an alien robot in a deserted field and try to help him get back home.
A couple of seconds ago, our phones went crazy.
Whoa!
You see that?
Dude,
it's a map.
I want to go.
Whatever it is, we'll find out.
This is where the map says to go.
There's something in there. Whoa, what is that? 20 questions with an alien.
One beep is yes, two beeps are no. Are you from space?
Do you eat humans?
Oh. Get you home, all right? We'll find a way.
If that sounds familiar, if it sounds like a familiar setup, it is, because it's pretty much, in a lot of ways, I don't know if I call it a ripoff of E.T. I think that might be a little bit strong. It is definitely trying to live off the E.T. nostalgia with teens and preteens on their bicycles, saving an alien, trying to get it back home. I mean, these are elements that we saw in E.T.'s. These are the elements of the Amblin Entertainment films from the 80s. E.T., obviously, you have movies like The Goonies. These kind of movies are the essence of that sort of Spielberg family film when I was a kid. And for that, it does work as a piece of nostalgia. Watching this movie didn't make me remember what it was like to run around with my friends on bikes, and that's kind of what we did. Of course, it takes place in a modern world, so they got cell phones. And it is also appropriate for kids. I took my 11-year-old and my 13-year-old to see it, and they both enjoyed it. They thought it was a fun movie, and it does capture... My 13-year-old son, Liam, made the point. He said, it definitely captures the way kids his age are. I think it gives a very realistic portrayal of the kids, and it also has that sort of the archetypes that we saw in these Spielberg-type movies. You have sort of the outcast, the misfit who plays Munch in this one. You have these, you know, sort of like the kid who's, you know, a bit of the tough guy, the one who always gets in trouble, and he's in this one, you know, somebody like, we saw that in like Monster Squad, and we saw that in The Goonies. You had the Corey Feldman character in The Goonies. It also reminds me a little bit of, if you saw Super 8 a couple years ago, which in itself was a throwback to Spielberg Amblin Entertainment films from the 80s. So all that was good, and buried in this movie somewhere is a very fun film, a very cute, adorable family film that I could enjoy. But, and this, like Jennifer Lopez and Kim Kardashian, is a big but, this is found footage. And I remember when I looked at this trailer a couple weeks ago, and I said, oh, this might be good, but it looks like it's going to be found footage. And it is. And, you know, I feel like a broken record when I talk about found footage. I've learned to hate the genre, not necessarily if it's a good reason to have it. Like, for example, The Sacrament, which I talked about a couple weeks, was a well-done found footage movie because it was about people who actually knew how to shoot, and they were a news documentary, and it made sense for the movie. It actually made sense in the film. This one, it's so forced because, like every found footage movie, you have to explain why they're filming everything. You have to explain why they continue to film everything. They go out of their way to make sure that a camera's at some point taking photography of the incident. And in this movie, part of it is the kid's like, oh, this is my film. And it's him telling about it. And then as you're watching the movie, I even leaned over to my son in the middle of the movie. I said, how did he get this footage? Because that footage was not something he collected. This is something from elsewhere. So then it loses that even that semblance of logic. But beyond all of that and all of the hoops you have to jump through to justify the existence of the cameras and justify why people have them, the bottom line is it's a nauseating film to watch. It is unwatchable at parts because the camera's flying around so much. And I guess that's the thing with found footage. But to me, doing something crappily is not good. And I will give them credit. This movie did look exactly like they handed a couple cameras to a bunch of 13-year-old kids and told them to make a movie. That is the level of cinematography. It's a gimmick. There's no reason, and that's the other thing, there's really no reason for this to be found footage. There's no pragmatic reason for this to be a found footage movie. It could have been a much better film if they just shot a movie. But they spend so much time justifying it, and they spend so much time with terrible footage because of it, that it ends up being not a good movie. And so for that reason, I'm saying Earth to Echo sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Deliver Us from Evil. Eric Bana stars in this true story about a New York detective who encounters demonic spirits in his job that eventually threaten his family.
There's two types of evil in this life, Officer Sarge. Secondary evil, the evil that men do. And primary evil, which is something else entirely.
I've seen some horrible things. Nothing that can't be explained by human nature.
Then you haven't seen true evil.
I heard scratching noises under the floor in a room.
Scratching noises?
This is not a great time to release horror movies, and there are some horror movies that I think could have actually done well had they not been released in the summer. I think Hostel 2 was a great example of it. The first Hostel was released in January, did really good business. The second Hostel was like released in June, and it disappeared. Horror movies tend not to do terribly well in the summer. Why? Because generally horror movies are for, you know, January or September, October time frame. That seems to be a more accepted time for these horror movies. Everyone wants a big summer blockbuster or a big raucous comedy in the summer. Yet last year we had The Conjuring, which was a huge surprise hit, did massive business for being a summertime release. And I think Sony is trying to get a little bit of that Conjuring juju to make a bigger movie out of the summer with Delivers from Evil. The director is Scott Derrickson, who did The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which was okay, and Sinister, which was actually a very good movie. It's not as good as Sinister. Sinister was a very smartly done, well-constructed film. This one has certain moments. It reminds me of a little bit of like a David S. Goyer film, where you watch it and you realize that it could have been a lot better if it would have just been better written and tighter together. Because any scene, you take any scene out of it and watch the scene, and it really is pretty cool. But when you string them all together, they really don't make a whole lot of sense, and they're not terribly cohesive. And I think part of this is because it's based on this series of true events that this guy had encountered, and him dealing with this, and this detective dealing with this priest to help him out, where sort of it does feel like this sort of hodgepodge of stories that are forced to cling together, and it doesn't quite work. Plus, it gets very repetitive at times. It's extremely dark, and I'm not talking about mood. I'm talking about the look of it. It is almost impossible to see what's going on at times, and it just sort of repeats itself. And it gets really convoluted. For as simple of a story as it is, what it really is, when you get down to the core of it, is these demons coming after this guy. It's incredibly convoluted. So, I mean, like I said, any of these scenes, like there's that scene in the trailer with the owl, the ha-ha-hoo, the little owl that rolls out there and is a stuffed owl. That scene's great. And it really feels like a movie like The Conjuring with that scene. But that's just that scene. Everything else outside of it is a much more sort of in-your-face, obnoxious cop fighting demons kind of drama. So I don't know. I mean, I'm going to give it a little bit of benefit of the doubt because I saw it on 2 hours of sleep, and I'd been up like at 8 a.m, and it was a midnight show. So I was exhausted and I was nodding off in it. So I'm not going to say it's going to put you to sleep because I was in a situation where I would have fallen asleep anyways. But I do think it's a movie that could have been a lot better. And ultimately, isn't that good. So I'm actually going to say that Delivers from Evil kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
Although I will say this, after rendering that verdict, by default, it's kind of the best movie of the weekend because I didn't like Tammy and I didn't like Earth to Echo. So, you know, even though this isn't that good of a movie, it tops the weekend. In fact, I never thought I'd get to the point where I would say, you know what, your best bet is to go see the crappy Michael Bay movie that came out last week because it's a better film than any of the three that are being released this week. Or better yet, go see Edge of Tomorrow or X-Men, one of the good movies this summer, and stay away from the bad ones. Oh, heavens, I'm up against the clock here. It's time to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about listener feedback, some box office, and the world-famous DVD Roundup. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I mean, we're going to be talking about some real interesting stuff, some controversy that's actually been going on with the box office, with Michael Bay's Transformers Age of Whatever, and the box office reporting. But before we get to that, I want to talk about this voicemail I got. I found it very funny. So I'm going to go ahead. Let me just go ahead and play it. I'm without introduction.
This message is for Kevin Carr. Your movie reviews suck a
and you're an idiot. I got you. I got you good. Oh, yeah. I got you so good. Please have a nice day.
You notice I had to bleep some things. So there was some profanity in there. This is not the first time I've gotten the "you suck" voicemail or email or feedback on what I do. I did have to laugh at the delivery. I thought this was actually a very, he got me. Boy, did he get me. I don't know what I can do. I don't know what I can do. There's no response to this. So yeah, this one made me chuckle. Anyways, that was a fun little lark. Let's talk about box office though. And was I correct? $100 million for Transformers Age of Extinction. That is what I said. And was I correct? Pretty close. Now, how close was I? We don't know yet. And here's why. Apparently, when they had the weekend start on Thursday night, and they had like 8.75 million for Thursday night shows, which was right on par in a lot of the other movies, right close to what like X-Men and Spider-Man were doing. And then they had like a $41 million opening day, which is Friday, which is pretty big. And then they said, oh, well, this should be on track to do more than $100 million. And that was what was being reported. And then suddenly the Saturday numbers started coming in, and they came in a little softer. And they're like, people are like, well, maybe it won't make $100 million. Will it make $100 million? Will it not? When they finally announced the estimates, Paramount said $100 million. You know, 100,000,000.00 was what their estimate was. So you know that's a BS estimate because it's rounded to the nearest cent. Then, when they finally came in with the actual numbers, Paramount said it was $100,038,000. And the people at Deadline Hollywood, which actually does way better reporting and more realistic and quality reporting than they ever did when Nikki Fink was running it, they came out and they said, you know, they actually have records from actual third-party people who run the numbers from the ticket sales, that it wasn't over $100 million, that it was like 97, 98, something like that. Which the reality is, that's a teeny tiny percent difference. That's a negligible statistical difference. What I find interesting is that $100 million number was really important to Transformers. It was really important to Paramount. It kind of reveals how important the reporting is and how important living up to those expectations are when the stock market opens on that Monday. On top of it, that number, if you factor in the $100,038,000 that they it reportedly made, it then pushes the international number, the worldwide number, over $300 million for the weekend, which is great. But $298 million versus $301 million, not a huge difference. I mean, that's a 1% difference. But they wanted those $100 million headlines because we haven't had a $100 million movie yet. And I still don't think we will. I think with the final numbers all come crunched through, we will find out that Transformers actually made just under $100 million. And the rumor was that there was going to be layoffs at Paramount. At least I read this on Deadline, that there was like going to be layoffs if they didn't reach $100 million. So for everybody who says that image doesn't matter, it's just about the money. It is not just about the money. It's what we, people like me, report. And we shouldn't be led astray, and whatever the studio says, if the studio is being really cagey about it, you should learn to question it more. So kudos to the Deadline team for looking at this. This week, I think that Transformers is still going to win. I think it's going to be at $48 million. I think it's going to be kind of dropping like a stone for no other reason than the opening weekend. $100 million for the first 3 days isn't that good for a Transformers movie. It's actually really low for a Transformers movie. Now, it's going to make up way more than that overseas, and it's probably on track for $1 billion worldwide. But ultimately, I think that the interest in Transformers is waning. At least Michael Bay directed Transformers is waning. And maybe part of it is this is the fourth movie of essentially the same stuff. I think that there's a lot of wisdom to swapping out directors. Because even if you take something like Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, and then Iron Man 3 is directed by Shane Black, still had a Marvel feel, still fit in that structure that Marvel sets up, but you have new blood directing it. You're not having the fatigue, not on the audience, but you're not having the franchise fatigue on the people making the movie. I do have to give kudos to Michael Bay on this, though. You know, mark this down. A couple years ago, he got all upset at the reviews and the people who are saying that his Transformers movies were terrible. He actually weighed in on the naysayers this week. And he said on an MTV interview, he said, people like me, naysayers, love to hate And I don't care. Let them hate. They're still going to go see the movie. I think it's good to get a little tension. Very good. I used to be bothered by it, but I think it's good to get the dialogue going. It makes me think, and it keeps me on my toes, so it's good. I give kudos to Michael Bay for actually not getting upset at bad reviews, because he's always gotten bad reviews, with a few exceptions. So just deal with it. And he's finally making peace with it, and you know, gosh, if I could have his career, I'd love to have his career and finances and all that. You know, I have more respect for somebody who makes crap and is proud of the crap they make than somebody who makes crap and then apologizes for it. So, good for you, Michael Bay. I'm sure you were waiting for my approval. You're listening to Fat Guys and Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on into the world-famous DVD Roundup. I do want to mention that there is still time to get the Enemy DVD for free from the Fat Guys of the Movie Show. If you want to see Jake Gyllenhaal as a guy who discovers he has a doppelganger, I have a couple copies of Enemy to give away. All you have to do is send me an email to enemy@fatguysofthemovies.com and put Enemy in the subject title, and you'll be automatically entered. And you can do that up until July 7th. And then we're cutting it off, and I will announce the winners on the next show. So, yeah, get yourself going, and it's a free DVD. Good luck. I hope people can enter on that one. Today's DVD Roundup, though, has a bunch of stuff. I'm going to not bury the lead here. There is no stinker, because there's some good and some bad in the lineup. But the ones I want to talk about, we've got The Known Unknown, which is it's a documentary by Errol Morris about Donald Rumsfeld. And I think a lot of this is going to depend whether or not you like this on what your thoughts are on Donald Rumsfeld. It does interview him, so it's not this weird little Michael Moore unauthorized biography kind of thing. But I'm sure it's going to be critical of him a bit. And depending on who you are and how much you like Rumsfeld, you may or may not like this movie. There's also Afflicted, which is a horror film about people getting infected with something. And I think it's found footage, so I'm not a big fan of found footage. Kindergarten Cop, which is the original Schwarzenegger movie. Crybaby with Johnny Depp, the John Waters film. Bring It On, the cheerleading film with Gabrielle Union and Kirsten Dunst. And The Little Rascals, the reboot from the 90s feature film. Those are all getting Blu-ray releases this week. A lot of them probably already had Blu-ray releases, but they are new discs, so you can check those out. There's also Helix Season 1 from television, Sci-Fi Channel show. There is No Vacancy, which is a sequel to the horror film Vacancy with Luke Wilson and Kate Beckinsale. They've done a couple of these. They did No Vacancy 2. I forget which number this one is. Then if you have a young girl in your house, she might be interested in Monster High. There's a Clawsom double feature. Monster High is very rudimentarily animated, not terribly original stories. It does kind of have that feel of a cheap Cartoon Network type of show, but you know what? It connects with a certain audience that's not me. The other one I want to point out, and you heard this music leading into the segment, is Cannibal Holocaust has gotten a Blu-ray release. I love the fact that a movie like this gets a Blu-ray release. It's like when they released the original I Spit on Your Grave, which was so cheap, it doesn't even have music. It doesn't have a score. It has sound, but it doesn't have a score. Cannibal Holocaust does, and it has a hilariously beautiful musical score. It's this weird after-school TV special music from the 80s, and it leads into this horrifying story of cannibalism and torture and just awful, awful things that happen. If you've not seen Cannibal Holocaust, I'm not necessarily recommending it, but it is one of those movies that if you really want to kind of get your video nasty on, you know, if you've seen movies like Last House on the Left and you know, Sallow and I Spit on Your Grave and even more recent ones like Irreversible and The Human Centipede and a Serbian film, you got to put Cannibal Holocaust on the list because it's a must-see when it comes to offensive movies. It's one of the banned films out there, so it's not terribly good, but it's sort of noteworthy for the horror aficionado. That's it. I've got a roll, people. I am done. I got to get out to Israel and go to Jerusalem, cover this film festival. You all have a happy 4th of July weekend. I will be talking to you all soon. And next week, I will be reporting from Jerusalem. and maybe covering a couple movies in the process. But until then, have a fat time at the movies.